Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you by the OU Israel Center, coming to you from Jerusalem. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Shabbat Parshat Shemot. Today is Yom Chamishi, Thursday. We're still in those months of Tevet and January, which coordinate, so today is the 19th of Tevet, as well as the 19th of January. And let's start, as we usually do, with Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed, and then we'll get down to the business of Parshat Shemot. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim k'raticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihiyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai miya amod. Ki imacha haslicha l'ma'an tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro ho'cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mishomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha'chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'umedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, u'miafela l'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. I took a look at the hard copy of Torah Tidbits over the last number of years. We've been putting it out for more than 13 years now. And I know that there's a topic that I have every so often revisited. Not once a year, much less than that. I've probably spoken about it also in Torah Tidbits audio. But this is the time to bring it up again. There are several sedras where this would be an appropriate topic, but somehow Shmot is the one that jumps out at me and calls for this to be repeated. This particular week, I titled the lead tidbit in the hard copy, True, Chava fed Adam from the tree, but... I don't know, maybe I was being a little too cutesy with that, but basically it is a call to attention to men and to women of not just the prominence of women in the Torah, but of the superior role that they played in the formation of the Jewish nation. But let's start from the beginning, not Chava, but the beginning of the Jewish people with Avraham Avinu and Sarah Imenu. We all remember the episode where Sarah sees Yishmael behaving improperly with Yitzchak and says to Avraham, get rid of this kid and his mother, or get rid of the mother and her son, because Yitzchak is the focus of your legacy. Avraham Avinu doesn't like that idea. And God comes and says to him, listen to what Sarah is telling you. You get the flavor there from commentaries that Avraham Avinu had a certain personality which maybe didn't allow him to be too critical of Yishmael. His overwhelming trait of chesed, kindness, blinded him to the negative effect Yishmael would have on Yitzchak. Sarah Imenu saw much better, apparently, and God confirms it by saying, do what she says. Next generation, Yitzchak Avinu, is both literally blind and figuratively blinded to the real personality and persona of Esav, his son. The Torah says Yitzchak loved Esav and subsequently wanted to give him the main blessing. Rivka Imenu saw something that Yitzchak did not see or was not given to see. She saw that it was Yaakov that needed to be the recipient of that bracha. And she maneuvered things so that Yaakov would receive that bracha. It involved deceit of Yitzchak, and Yaakov was involved in that as well. But there are commentaries that point to certain words in the text and indicate that she was operating with divine guidance, or almost command, because she was given a task that Yitzchak was not going to fulfill. Next generation, Yaakov Avinu sees Rachel and falls in love with her, and wants to marry her, and makes a deal with her father Lavan of how many years he will work to pay off the dowry price, or whatever, for the hand of Rachel Imenu. It is Rachel Imenu that sees, or is given to see, that there is a destiny that from Yaakov will descend the 12 tribes of Israel, and in order to accomplish that, she, Rachel Imenu, gives up her potential role as Yaakov's only wife, by switching the signs or giving Leah the signs so that Yaakov would first marry Leah, as Lavan arranged it, and then Rachel. We attribute to both Rachel Imenu and Leah Imenu the insight to do what they did, even though the deceit, let's say, came from Lavan. Their participation was L'shem Shamayim, for the sake of heaven, in order to guarantee the destiny and the legacy that started with Avraham to Yitzchak to Yaakov. Three cases so far where the patriarch, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, did not see a certain point, did not work towards a certain goal, but Sarah Imenu, Rivka Imenu, Rachel, and Leah were the ones who maneuvered things, and if you don't like that word, find a nicer word, so that the ultimate goal would come to realization. We can carry it to the next generation. When Yehuda leaves his brothers after the sale of Yosef, and he marries, and he has a son, and marries him off, and that doesn't work out, etc., etc. And if it were only up to Yehuda, Tamar would still be sitting, waiting to be married into the family of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, so to speak. But she takes the initiative to disguise herself, become pregnant from Yehuda, reveal herself later to him privately, where he admits that he was wrong, and that allows to be put into operation the continuation, the continuity of the tribes of Israel. True, we're just talking about Yehuda, but it's a major one because of Lo Yasur Shevet Mi-Yehuda. The kingship will be housed in Yehuda, and that will be in perpetuity. But it was Tamar, a woman, who brought it about where Yehuda was a little out of it in recognizing what was necessary. Let's add one other thing from that generation. True, it's based on Midrashim, but you have the story with Yosef and the wife of Potiphar, who attempted to seduce Yosef, and he resisted, and she accused him of pursuing her and attacking her. The situation probably would have led to an off with his head end of Yosef, but we are taught who interceded on Yosef's behalf. Asenat, later Yosef's wife, daughter of Potiphar, according to one opinion, who told her father the truth. He had no choice but to have Yosef taken to jail, but had he believed his wife, or had the wife won the day, Yosef would have been executed. Certainly not popped into a jail situation. I threw that in just as an extra freebie, because all of the above has been an introduction to Parshat Shemot. In Parshat Shemot, we start with a decree of Paro. Paro recognizing that the nation of Israel was growing to large proportion, talking to his advisors about the danger that he perceived, that if there would be a war against Egypt, the people of Israel might join his enemies and they'd be in a lot of trouble. So they started to oppress them. And then Paro issues an order to the midwives that when they assist in the birth of the Ivriot, the Jewish girls, when you see if it's a boy, kill it, and if it's a girl, let her live. The Torah tells us that the Mialadot, who are identified as Shifra and Pua, defied Paro. They feared God, and they did not do what they were told. Vatechayena et hayiladim, they sustained the lives of the boys. There are two opinions as to who Shifra and Pua are. One opinion is that Shifra was Yocheved and Pua was Miriam. The other opinion is that they were two unknown except by their names and their profession, midwives, two midwives who defied Paro and saved the Jewish people, saved the Jewish boys. Next we come to the decree that all boys born in Egypt shall be thrown into the river. What does Amram, head of the Jewish community, decree men and women should separate from each other. Husbands and wives shall not continue raising families. And this way, they won't be put into this situation of unbearable oppression and slavery. Comes Miriam Hanaviah, Miriam the prophetess, who prophesies to her father that his decree is harsher than Paro's. Paro decreed only that the boys should be killed. You, Father Amram, have basically decreed that no boys or girls should be born. As a result of that prophecy, Amram remarries or retakes his wife, Yocheved, and the result of that union is baby Moshe, the future Moshe Rabbeinu, the one who brought the Jewish people out of Egypt. Through the initiative or impetus, let's say, of Miriam. They're able to hide the baby because the decree of killing the boys is still in existence. They hide him for 3 months. They can no longer hide him. Commentaries have different opinions as to why not. And it is Yocheved, his mother, not his father, his mother, female, a woman, who takes a basket and waterproofs it from the outside and puts Moshe into it and floats him on the Nile with the watchful, under the watchful eye of his sister Miriam, woman again, and that saves Moshe Rabbeinu's life because, as some commentaries suggest, the astrologers of Egypt have reported to Paro that they saw in the stars that the future Redeemer of Israel has been cast into the river as he has instructed. Well, they got that almost right, but not quite, because he was put into the river, but he was put in a nice, comfortable, waterproof basket, and he was found. And who found him? Bat Paro, the daughter of Paro, princess of Egypt, who finds him, sees that it's a Jewish baby who is crying, and saves his life. Not only does she pull him out of the water, but she brings a wet nurse who does not succeed in nursing Moshe, and there's a girl standing by, we know her as Miriam, who recommends, maybe, he says to Her Royal Highness, you would like me to go get a Jewish wet nurse to take care of the baby. Do that, she says, and who does Miriam bring back? Her mother and Moshe's mother, Yocheved. So Yocheved has her baby Moshe back until he is weaned, after which he is given back to the daughter of Paro, and we could imagine that her father wanted to kill him, and she saved his life again. Women are the ones who are actively guiding the destiny of the Jewish nation. If it were not for those women, I wouldn't be doing this show, probably. Imagine that. No Torah Tidbits audio. Let's fast forward to a little later in the Sedra, when Moshe finally accepts God's mission of going to Paro and going to the people and facilitating redemption. And on the way, they stop off at a motel or an inn. And the Torah very enigmatically tells us that God wanted to kill Moshe. Tzipporah, his wife, a woman, takes a flint and circumcises her son, and Moshe's life is saved. Had it not been for Tzipporah, had it not been for Yocheved's action, had it not been for Miriam, had it not been for Bat Paro, we don't exist. And it just keeps going on and on. But that's it for Shemot. No, let's add one more thing. Can't miss this, and it belongs to Shemot and Va'era and Bo. We are told by sources based on Psukim in Shir HaShirim that the men of Egypt, despaired. And the women adorned themselves, perfumed themselves in order to lift the spirits of their husbands so that they should not lose hope in redemption. And that's why we have the well-known saying, Biglal Nashim Tzadkaniot Nigalu Avotenu Mimitzrayim. Because of righteous women, our ancestors were redeemed from Egypt. Well, beyond Shemot in the Torah, we have Yael, and we have Devorah, and we have Esther, and we have many other women who were instrumental in bringing about the continuity of the salvation to Israel and its continuity. Personally, I see this as very remarkable, and that's why I take the opportunity to say it to the Dvar Torah at the table, or to write about it in Torah Tidbits, or like I'm doing now, to speak about it on Torah Tidbits audio. It is something that's not a small thing. We started with Sarah and Rivka and Rachel and Leah and Tamar and Asenat, and we went into Shifra and Puah and Yocheved and Miriam and women in Egypt in general. It's an amazing thing. And beyond, many, many more women. I don't even think you could use the expression, the power behind the scenes, because they're not behind the scenes. They're very right up front. And they were successful. Baruch Hashem. An interesting additional tidbit on the business of women in Egypt. There's a halachic discussion as to whether the fast of the firstborns applies to women as well. Since in Egypt, the firstborn in the household died, and that included male as well as female. So by logical extension, perhaps firstborn females should be required to fast on Erev Pesach as well. There are opinions that say yes, but there are significant opinions that say no. Women are not included in the fast of the firstborns, and the reason that is given is very beautiful for women. Male firstborns did not deserve to be spared, and were only spared by an act of kindness and chesed by God, and therefore we must atone by fasting on Erev Pesach. Women deserved to be spared. They had the merit. There was no need for them to atone. Hence, they don't fast. You have been listening and are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Shemot. Let me jump for a moment to the Haftorah. The Haftorah is, according to Ashkenazim, from Yeshayahu. Sfardim read the first chapter in Yirmiyahu. A well-known pasuk in the Haftorah for Ashkenazim, I would like to use to sort of sum up an idea. The pasuk is, V'hoya bayom hahu, it shall come on that day, Yitaka b'shofar gadol, there will be the sound of a great shofar, Uva'u ha'ovdim be'eretz Ashur v'hanidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim, and the Jews that are scattered for whatever reason, whatever different kinds of situations they find themselves, they'll be scattered around the world, they will come to Eretz Yisrael, v'hishtachavu l'ashem b'har ha'kodesh b'Yerushalayim, and they will bow to God on the holy mountain, Har HaBayit, with a Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. The ingathering of the exiles, in other words. This is one of the psukim from the Shofarot section of the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. It's also been made into a song, which I'm going to play at least one version, maybe two, in a couple of minutes. And it could be used as a summary of the Geula, the final redemption, which is significant because the Sedra itself begins at the beginning. We're not yet a nation, we're a large family, but the generation of the patriarchs, the generations, plural, of the patriarchs, have come to an end, and this is now the new future B'nai Yisrael, who are enslaved in Egypt, awaiting their first salvation. But we know that it's a continuing story. It would be nice if we at the Pesach Seder can tell about the Exodus and say, and we, the Jewish people, lived happily ever after. Unfortunately, we have not. And therefore, our appetites are whetted for the Geula. Come into Eretz Yisrael, exile from Eretz Yisrael, build the Beit HaMikdash destroyed, return from exile, build the Beit HaMikdash destroyed, obviously I'm skipping a lot, and exile, and now the return to Eretz Yisrael, and the eager anticipation of the Geula Shlema. We have our share to do in it, God has his share, and hopefully the two of us, so to speak, will coordinate efforts and bring about the Geula, but it's summarized in the words of the Haftorah. I will first play the more well-known song of Uva'u Ha'ovdim, this one Shlomo Karlbach, and then if we have time later, a different version that is sung by Dudu Fisher. Not that this piece is going to be sung by Shlomo Karlbach, but it's his song, as we shall hear. Uva'u Ha'ovdim. There are a lot of small topics, or not so small, there are a lot of topics in Shemot that I'm not going to get to. But as long as I spent all that time on the topic of women in the Torah, let me... Oh, and I really should have mentioned the daughters of Tzelefchad and Serach Bat Asher, but I didn't mention them. We'll add them on a different time when we redo the topic. The other topic that gets me very up is something especially I like to tell the friends and family and listeners who have not yet committed themselves to living in Eretz Yisrael. But I realize that even we who live here need the reinforcement and the encouragement. We have a column in Torah Tidbits, hard copy each week, by Alona Ale, called Chizuk and Idud. Idud is directed for the not yet Olim, to encourage them to come. Basically, it's Parshat Hashavua from an Aliyah orientation. And Chizuk is to strengthen Olim and others who live here in Israel. And I suggest that this is going to be the same, but I think it's an important thing to note. I've written about it many times. I've spoken about it. God's first prophecy to Moshe Rabbeinu is at the burning bush. Commentaries tell us from various sources that that prophecy was a seven-day experience for Moshe Rabbeinu. It was not all given at once. But I want to focus, I mean, we obviously sense that it's an extremely important prophecy where Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest of all prophets ever and ever to be, is receiving prophecy for the first time. God says to Moshe, First, he identifies himself as the God of Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov, and Moshe turns his face away because he's afraid of looking. And God says to him, I have seen the plight of my people in Egypt, and I have heard their cries, and I will go down into Egypt to save them from the Egyptians, ulha'aloto, and to bring them up from that land, I am only translating as I look at the psukim, to a good and expansive land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Kanaani, Chiti, Emori, Prizi, Chivi, and Yevusi, namely, I will bring them to Eretz Yisrael. For me, the significance here is we're not talking about two separate things. We're talking about a single verse that says, in God's words, I will go down into Egypt to save the people, to bring them from there to a land flowing with milk and honey, the land of Canaan. There is no division of those two tasks. God's plan, take us out of Egypt and bring us to Eretz Yisrael. Not, as I often write, or certainly another way of looking at it, but for now I want to say not as one, to take them out of Egypt, two, to bring them to Eretz Yisrael, but, if you want to, part one, to take them out of Egypt, part two, to bring them to Eretz Yisrael. But to me the significance is first, that coming to Eretz Yisrael is mentioned to Moshe right up front. It's not down the road when he succeeds in taking the people out, and then he says to God, okay, now what? No, right up front. God says, I am taking the people, I'm going down into Egypt to save the people from Mitzrayim, to bring them to an Eretz Tova Urchava El Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. This is the first time that term, Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, a land flowing with milk and honey, is used, and that's very significant for us as well. Later in this prophecy, there is reference to proof that I have sent you to take the people out, God says to Moshe, is that you will subsequently come back to this place, which our tradition says is Mount Sinai, and serve me here, ta'avdun et ho'elokim al ho'hor hazeh, ta'avdun rather than ta'avdu, the extra nun is considered a remez to the 50th day following the Exodus, is the day of Matan Torah. So I have always spoken about the three-pronged plan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of God, to take us out of Egypt, to give us the Torah on our way to giving us Eretz Yisrael. A lot of different ways you can look at that, but what's inescapable is that the plan always included coming out of Egypt and going to Eretz Yisrael. It is not an option, I'm saying this, to say to God, thank you for taking me out of Egypt, thank you for freeing me from slavery, thank you for releasing me from the oppression in Egypt, goodbye, and have a nice life. No, it's part two, whatever you want to call it, it's a package deal. You cannot separate the commitment to the Torah and to live in Eretz Yisrael from being taken out of Egypt. We look back at the experience of being taken out of Egypt and we see it as done, we're out, we're not in Egypt anymore, we won't be in Egypt anymore, and the next two stages of receiving the Torah and going into Eretz Yisrael, well, this has its ups and its downs. I don't know if you want to include different facets of exile like being taken out of Egypt, but let's leave that. Let's just say of the three parts of the plan, and notice that I'm changing the flavor here a little bit, of the three parts of the plan, it is to come out of Egypt, check. The box next to it has a check mark, go on. To receive the Torah, here you have to not put a check yet, but some kind of mark that indicates, yes, we receive the Torah, but no, not all Jews have accepted the Torah as their guide to a way of life and a commitment to God and a commitment to mitzvot. So we're still working on that. And ulaha'aloto min ha'aretz ahi, to take you out of that land and bring you up el eretz tova rechava, el eretz zavat chalav udvash, etc. You also can't put a full check mark there yet. True, we got there, and we were exiled, and we got there again, and we were exiled, and we're getting there again. So that's got to have a different mark from a check mark to say God's original plan has still not come to its final fruition, but we're working on it. In fact, we're supposed to be working on it. Let me drift in a different direction now. Same idea. If you look in Rambam, Maimonides, Melech HaMashiach, the Mashiach has three major tasks: to restore Torah to the Jewish people, to restore the Jewish people to the land of Israel, to build the Beit HaMikdash. The first two tasks we should have been working on all the time, and some people are, but all of us should be involved in that. Teaching Torah, facilitating the teaching and learning of Torah, has many different ways that that could be accomplished. Building yeshivot, especially with the right orientation, is part of that. A person is capable of teaching Torah, then he teaches. If he doesn't, for whatever reason, capable or otherwise, does not teach Torah, he should be part of the support system for the teaching of Torah. And coming to Eretz Yisrael, again, those who are capable of coming to Eretz Yisrael should come. Those who, for whatever reasons, are not at this moment capable or ready to come. I'm still working. I can't transfer my job skills. I have elderly parents living in the States and I can't leave them. Whatever, Parnassa, this excuse, all good and well. But there should be either or both a coming, Aliyah, or planning towards Aliyah, or helping to support and encourage and facilitate Aliyah of one's children, perhaps, and of fellow Jews. Let's take a break from it, as if someone said, give it a rest, Phil. But let's take a moment out to hear another Uva'u Ha'ovdim Be'eretz Ashur, this time Dudu Fisher.
העובדים בארץ אשור, העובדים בארץ אשור, והנידחים בארץ מצרים, והנידחים בארץ מצרים. ובאו העובדים בארץ אשור, העובדים בארץ אשור, והנידחים בארץ מצרים, בארץ מצרים. וישתחוו לשם בהר הקודש, בהר הקודש בירושלים. וישתחוו לשם בהר הקודש, בהר הקודש בירושלים. אי נה 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 נה
בירושלים.
אי נה 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 נה
בירושלים. אנחנו
בהר הקודש, בהר הקודש בירושלים. ואיש שתחוו לשם בהר הקודש, בהר הקודש בירושלים. אין נה 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 Yerushalayim abnuya עובדים בארץ אשור, העובדים בארץ אשור, והנידחים בארץ מצרים, והנידחים בארץ מצרים. ובאו העובדים בארץ אשור, העובדים בארץ אשור, והנידחים בארץ מצרים, בארץ מצרים. וישתחוו לשם בהר הקודש, בהר הקודש בירושלים. וישתחוו לשם בהר הקודש, בהר הקודש בירושלים. אין נה 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 בירושלים, אין נה 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 בירושלים הבנויה, אין נה 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 בירושלים, אין נה 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 בירושלים הבנויה. וישתחוו לשם בהר הקודש, בהר הקודש בירושלים. אין נה 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 בירושלים, אין נה 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 בירושלים הבנויה, בירושלים הבנויה, בירושלים.
That was Dudu Fisher with words from the Haftorah, a little bit of ad-libbing with the Habnuya part, but nonetheless the sentiment is there, and I think we need to look at the Sedra and the Haftorah sort of like a package. You have entering into Shibud Mitzrayim, and no sooner do we finish that Sedra than we read in the Navi Yeshayahu of the prophecy of the ingathering of the exiles. And for us here in Israel, that's a very special aspect of the Geula, of redemption, because we have been privileged, as all Jews, to see the ingathering begin with every influx of Ethiopian Jews, earlier Yemenite Jews and Iraqi Jews and Russian Jews and American Jews and Jews from other Western countries. The most recent excitement is generated here, Israel, periodically by the Nefesh B'Nefesh groups that arrive. And people get very, very emotional seeing new immigrants coming off the plane. I could speak as a veteran of 24 years of Aliyah, where you never outgrow the thrill of seeing other people joining you. You made a decision in life. It's a decision you believe in. And it's nice to see that there are other people who have that kind of commitment. and the fact that they came 10 years after you did, or 10 years before, or 24 years later, get off right off the plane now. I must tell you that I'm not jealous of the fact that they have cell phones, and we didn't have cell phones, because the generation before me, not the generation, but the wave of immigrants before me didn't have any phones. And, you know, in each decade, we'll say, you have your own stories. Took us 6 months till we had our own phone. Used to go down to the post office and wait online to make an international call. I'd call the operator. She called me back. Had to wait. Couldn't talk long. The connection wasn't good. And today, you know, nothing at all like that. But every time has its own stories. And kol hakavod to all the Jews from anywhere who come, each with his different motivation. And by the way, that's part of the meaning of the words in that verse from the Haftorah that we've had twice already in song, where it speaks of Ha'ovdim be'eretz Ashur and Nidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim. It sort of is a symbol of Jews that are lost maybe into a culture in a liberal society, and Jews who are pressed and oppressed in a less liberal society. Both of those are part of the ingathering of the exiles, and they both come. Let me switch to a personal note here. Yesterday I had the privilege and honor and joy of being Sandak for a new grandson. First child, Bechor, that is, of my middle daughter Aviva and her husband Ohad. As we say, my son-in-law, the accountant, as opposed to my other son-in-law, the new doctor, as opposed to my third daughter, who is still doing Shirut Lumi and has not given us a son-in-law yet, which I'm not rushing her. In any event, my daughter gave birth last Wednesday, about 2 minutes before sunset, and that meant the Brit would be Wednesday, if it were on time, which it was. And Baruch Hashem, we had the Brit yesterday. The baby's name is Shoham, which is an anagram of Moshe, Shin Mem He, as opposed to Mem Shin He. My father, Zichrono Livracha, and my Mechutin's father were both Moshe, and my son-in-law has a brother named Moshe, so the children didn't want to use the name Moshe, but they rearranged the letters, and as my daughter put it, she feels as if Grandpa is hiding within the new little person, cute little baby, Shoham. Shoham is also the breastplate stone for Yosef, and the shoulder stones, with some commentaries explain, represent Ephraim and Menashe, and Yosef, Ephraim, and Menashe were all from Parshat Vayechi, which is baby Shoham's Sedra.
Bonnie, move.
on that note, let me wish you all not only a Shabbat Shalom as I do every week, but many smachot, you and your families, much nachat from them, and they from you, and lehishtameach.